Beef, wine, and shenanigans. Pandemic episode number 18, socially distant as fuck. Ladies and gentlemen, SVP, Steve Van Patten, coming to you, recorded for posterity's sake. Joining me as always, Kirk Johnson, Mark Abbott from their respective domiciles. And ladies and gentlemen, our guest tonight is without a doubt the biggest we've had on Beef, Wine, and Shenanigans. Her time at MTV, which is where I know her from, she catapulted into stardom as the unforgettable Peyton on the TV show One Tree Hill and went on to star in other shows like White Collar and Lethal Weapon, the TV show, not the movie. She's way too young for that. She is also the author of the New York Times bestseller, The Rural Diaries, Love, Livestock, and Big Lessons Down on Mischief Farm. Ladies and gentlemen, it is my honor to present Hillary Burton Morgan.
Oh, I miss you so much, Steve. I miss your face. Hi, guys.
Hey.
All right. So let me ask you. So, Hillary, at this point, does anybody even bring up an MTV to you anymore?
Only old timers. No, there's like, you know what's super weird is that in quarantine, we've all kind of adjusted how we're doing our business. And since my book came out in May, everyone's like, let's do a TV show about farms. And now all of these production companies are like, but can she host? She's just a silly actress. And none of them remember that I had hosted for years on MTV. Like, you work so hard to not be a VJ. And then so many years later, they're like, but can she hold a microphone? I don't know.
Oh,
she's an actress. They're not that bright.
Oh, yeah. Jesus Christ.
Somebody didn't do their homework.
Yeah.
No. Yeah.
Wikipedia, bitches.
Well, do you ever feel like you've been alive for 1,000 years? Because I feel like one of your vampires, Steve. I feel like I've lived so many different chapters at this point that I'm like, I guess I was a VJ. I don't know.
yes, you were. I do remember that. Just before we jumped on, we were actually talking about one of the anecdotes that you mentioned in the book, the whole thing about, I guess it was some sort of round robin question.
Yeah.
What would you do if you got $1 million?
Yeah.
And your answer, rather, you know, nice answer, was to have a Christmas tree farm.
That's right. I knew exactly what I wanted. I was like, 10 years old? I knew what I wanted.
Yeah, and that's just interesting because, you know, I guess we go to commercial break and you got chastised for that answer, which, you know, I hate to say, typical MTV.
MTV wanted me to be cool and I just wasn't, but it was... The thing that I didn't say in the book, Steve, that you know, is that it was my boyfriend, the segment producer that told me that it was a dorky answer, was my boyfriend at the time. So it was a double whammy.
Yeah.
Did you punch him?
I dumped him?
You dumped him. There you go. Yeah.
She sure did. She sure did. And that brings me to an anecdote.
Oh, no.
And we're not naming him because he's not a horrible person or anything. But so she does dump him, and we're actually in Mexico, all of us, the whole crew,
Jesus.
Everything, and he is naturally despondent, and at one point, I mean, we were all drinking, maybe some more than others.
Yeah,
it was, you know, we're doing MTV Spring Break. I mean, what do you think?
So we had a great time.
And yes, I think, you know, for the most part. We managed to have some fun, but not him, because...
I found my new boyfriend on that trip.
So one thing he did was he apparently ran across the top of a Mexican police car.
What?
In his trauma over losing Hillary. At least that's what we all figured. Like, yeah, he's still upset about.
Is that a rally?
No, it wasn't a rally. It wasn't Mexican police matter or anything like that. It was he literally ran across and apparently the show got him out of trouble. They might have arrested him or whatever. And I remember that specifically because I remember thinking to myself, now if for some reason my black ass had run across the top of a police car.
Privilege.
Yeah. Like, I could see Dave Cerulnik, like, calling my mother. So, we don't really know where Steve is, because...
No.
I don't know, Steve. I don't know, Steve. You got that Langston Hughes thing going on with you.
He's charming. He could have charmed his way
out. I'm just saying. Yeah.
Yeah.
He got swag. I don't know, man.
You guys are giving me way too much credit.
I'm just saying, man.
He would have ended up being the head of the police force.
And I just remember, like, rats running across my feet in the restaurant I was hiding out in, because I knew that he was being weird, and I was like, I'll just go to a restaurant with a couple of, like, my friends. And I just remember they're, like, feeling things on my feet, not thinking anything of it, and finally looking down, and it was just all rats.
Oh, wow. That's horrifying. Okay.
Well,
wait, what part of it? I want to know, like, you know what?
It's Cancun.
It's Cancun?
Yeah, that's where they always did it.
Do you remember the name of the place?
No.
Of the restaurant?
Yeah.
Oh, God, no. It was like 20 years ago.
I know, but that sounds like an opening to a really interesting horror story there.
I mean, we could dream up some.
Hiding out. I'm just saying, hiding out. And Cancun, which is the place that everyone goes to to spring break, and you happen to find the one restaurant bar that is infested. And it was empty. There's a reason why it was empty, sister.
I won't run into anyone here.
Except the rats.
Except the rats.
Poor choices, guys.
Yo, quiero Taco Bell. Anyway.
That's probably like a demon hangout in Mexico. That's why nobody goes there.
It's a doorway.
Right. I'm drawn to it. Exactly. They were pulling me in. Come.
Oh. See? You were almost cabin in the woods.
Oh, shit. Restaurant in the woods.
Yeah,
that's my life up here in the Hudson Valley. I keep thinking, anytime, like I get someone new to work on the house up here, that movie Straw Dogs always sticks in my head.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
This place is, like, ready for horror films. It's just, they shot A Quiet Place up here. So it's that.
Oh, wow.
Oh, okay.
Oh, right. Nice.
Now you know where I am.
Now we got it. Yeah. Definitely.
Oh, that's awesome.
Let's get into something here. So you and I talked recently, and we basically we're of the same mind that something's really wrong with our government, in the sense that they're trying to force these school reopenings along the country. And I know you've been using your social media to kind of push back on that. But first of all, thank you for that, because, you know, I think there's a lot of risk in when a celebrity goes outside of being apolitical, you know, like, you know, I'm always thinking about, like, how LeBron James is told, you know, shut up and dribble
and
all that, you know. And so thank you, first of all, for doing that. But, like, what do you think that's all about?
Well, I mean, we know what that's about. When you've got the puppeteers kind of hoarding all the wealth in our country, the easiest way to get the masses to deflect is to get them to be angry at each other. So rather than be mad at our federal government for not freezing mortgages and freezing rents and doing things that would have facilitated people to get through this pandemic and not being able to go out and work, they are using schools as the cure-all for everything. You know, you can't go back to work because your kids are home. That's the school's fault. That's the teacher's fault. They're pussies, you know? And, you know, the responses that I've gotten to my posts have been really eye-opening, because I thought it was a no-brainer to support teachers, right? Like, duh. No, because when you put up a quote that is a fear or concern that a teacher has expressed, which is what I've been doing. I just said, email me your concerns. I'll post them anonymously. And hopefully we'll just open some people's eyes about what you guys are actually having to face. I'm getting responses that I'm pro-child trafficking, and so that's why I want kids to stay at home so we can't keep track of that. Oh, crazy shit, dude. That, you know, yes, there are kids who are in bad home situations, and school is where they receive the social care that they need. But it shouldn't be that way. You know, we should have social services that aren't dependent on a school setting to be able to be implemented. You know, being able to get meals and you know, home supplies, you know, like bathroom products for people who live in low-income families. All of those social services have kind of been funneled through the schools. And so we make teachers go to school for a million years and rack up a ton of student debt in order to teach. We pay them the bare minimum, and then we put all of our social pressure on them. And when they balk at that, we get pissy with them. That doesn't make any sense. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm not related to any educators. My mom was like a kindergarten teacher's aide for a while, and she drove the school bus when I was in middle school. And so all of those other jobs that aren't even just the educators, like the lunch ladies, the librarians, the custodians, all of these people that are being kind of lumped into this mass fix of just send the kids to school. That'll fix everything. That'll fix the economy. They're basically being told to walk into the line of fire, and I'm not good with it.
Right. Speaking of those people, Mark, you actually work in education.
Do you?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm actually a school business manager.
Okay. So you
know. I deal with the budgets and everything. And, you know, I think basically what has happened is years and years, particularly with the New York City school system, years and years of both systemic racism and just, like you said, we just pile all of these programs and everything into the schools because we don't want to deal with them outside of that has caught up to everybody. One of the things that I know we have an issue with is we have a lot of schools in Manhattan in very wealthy neighborhoods where the families and the parent-teacher associations give money.
Yeah.
You know, it's tons of money. And the school I work at, we don't have that luxury. And so those kids went home with computers. They went home with all of the tools that they needed to learn. And everybody else was kind of left at their own device. It's like, you know, we don't have the money for that. But, you know, and then on top of doing all of this, like most recently, my wife and I, we're on this thing with the city chancellor, and everyone is sitting there. All of the hierarchies are like, the remote learning went great. I'm like, for who? Because I became a pre-K teacher. In 3 months, they should give me a teaching license now for the amount of work that I've done. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But to now try to use that as the reason why we can't get the ball rolling on things. I mean, to be honest with you, they haven't even discussed really what we are supposed to do as working parents. It's literally, they came up with this system called blended learning, where the kids will go in 1 week for 2 days. They're broken up into these pods.
Meanwhile, the teacher still sees everybody.
The teacher sees everybody. They're broken up into these pods, 2 days a week, 1 day the next week, and 2 days afterwards. I'm not sure who's supposed to get an education like that. But then what you're saying is that on the off days, when the children aren't there, well, we're setting up city centers where you can drop your child off for daycare. But so then why don't we in, you know, my well, thing is I, so then that makes no sense because now my child is going to be with other kids from other places. And who's to say one of those children doesn't get my child sick and my child goes back to school the next week. And now we have a complete and utter disaster on our hands. And then the other half of that was, well, what we can do is we can get the cohorts together. And if your child is in one particular class, they stick with those kids. And, you know, on the off days, we could try to do fundraisers to pay to have kids in programs. So I'm like, so now free education has become paid education.
Right. Exactly.
I now have to decide whether or not I have to pay someone to tutor my child.
Yeah.
There's no structure to any of this. And then on the back end, you're saying to the teachers, well, we don't understand. This guy, I've heard people say, well, this was your chosen profession.
No, guys.
It's your chosen profession. And I'm like, well, I'm pretty sure when people went into science, nobody said, you know what I want to do when I grow up? I want to walk into a place where there are active viruses that kill people. The thought process behind this is disgusting.
Yeah.
And to put our children on the front, because really what we're looking at here is either you're going to send the kids back mm-hmm. or you're not. To try and, because this is like the canary in the coal mine. We're going to send the kids in these pods, and then we're going to see what happens. And if some of them get sick, then we'll shut everything down. But then we'll be back.
Rich people are saying, not with my kid.
Not with my kid. No.
But we know what kids are getting exposed to this.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
It's got options, and it's bullshit.
And again, like you said, we have families who, like here in the city, they opened up the schools for the lunches. Mm-hmm. So families could come and get lunches and they could have food at home, you know, to feed the kids and everything. Mm-hmm. But there are children at home right now who are being neglected, being beaten, they're sexually abused. They're basically saying, well, we're not sending ACS, we're not going to send workers into those buildings to look for those kids because of COVID. Let's open up the school. Because, you know, the children will be there. And I'm like, but I think you fail to understand that the school is not designed to be, it's a place of education.
Yeah.
It's a place for children to be learn social, emotional, but it is not designed to be a fort. It is not the place that we take them and dump, like people, yes, people do use schools as daycare. Because a lot of people, you have families who have to, you know.
Work.
Parents have to work, yeah.
Really right now, let's ask this question. If I was a cop and I worked the night shift, I worked the day shift. My wife was EMS and she worked the day shift. And neither one of our commanders were going to let us switch out because our child has to be home.
Yeah.
No one in the city, no one in the upper level of the city has even thought that through. It's literally like, we'll send them all back and then we'll deal with your problem when the time comes.
Now see, if there were mortgage freezes and rent freezes, would you feel as much pressure for both you and your wife to go back to work?
No. Everything, it's like a house of cards.
Yeah.
It's all connected. I know that when they announced they were, because I remember in March, mm-hmm. everybody said the same thing. There's no way they're going to close the schools. They close the schools, mm-hmm. New York City shuts down.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There's no way anybody's going to be. And when they announced schools were closing, I mean, it was like a bomb went off because you really don't realize how many children are in this city until now they're all at home. Yeah. And we now have to figure out what to do with them during the day. Some people are lucky. Some people have been working from home for years and can, you know, hey, not a problem, you go to work. But none of us are teachers. None of us went to school to be, and even think about the teachers who have children. Because now they're doing almost triple duty because now they're trying to take care of the kids in their class and now monitor their own children's work and then have to deal with those children's teachers. So it's none of this was thought through.
All summer. I mean, we've had time. You know what I mean?
Like and that's the thing that kills me about it, because it's like, and we've talked about this, Kirk and Steven, 1,001 times about the end game here. I don't get it. I mean, you're in a state where the virus is literally decimated the whole, from one end of the state to the other, and you're a governor and you're like, no, we're opening up the schools.
Oh my God.
One crop of people who are not fully infected by this disease, the ones who have literally been spared because many of us went and did what we were supposed to do. Now you want to try and throw them into the oven. And because I guess that's the whole thing. Once children start dying, then it becomes a problem.
So do you guys ever remember, like, did you have someone die when you were a kid?
Yes.
What's your first memory of, like, someone dying?
It was my grandfather.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My grandfather.
It was a friend of my grandparents, actually. Yeah, nice elderly gentleman come over for a little moonshine at times. Yeah.
Kirk, what about you? Do you remember?
Not really. It was my dad's brother.
Yeah.
I remember my dad was really broken up about it. I really can't recall. I can't recall my response, my reaction. I was like, I guess I was 7 or 8. Yeah. But my grandfather died. Oh, God. Okay. So when my dad passed away, I was really broken up.
Yeah.
Which was recent.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah, which is recent. But anything when I was 8, 7, I was nothing.
There's a psychological gravity to it. Like, I remember when I was in first grade, there was a fifth grade boy that had a heart condition at my school. Mm. And I watched him drop dead on the blacktop at our school during recess.
Yeah.
The whole school stopped, you know? Yeah. And there were assemblies and there was like grief counselors and it was a whole spread of resources because one child passed away.
Mm-hmm. Right?
And that was the appropriate response. But what do we do when, now that we've just thrown caution to the wind, okay, great, we're gonna send them in, we're gonna tell children to social distance, you know, and to follow all these procedures.
Right.
What's it gonna do to this whole crop of kids when they've got teachers and librarians and classmates and all these people that they're invested in dying? I mean, people, there's a real psychological element to this that we're setting our kids up for failure. We're setting them up for trauma.
I think you mentioned that, and I thought of, remember the shooting that happened a while back?
Which one?
With the children. It was at the school.
Oh, Sandy Hook.
It was Sandy Hook, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you know, the nation mourned. The nation was affected, the kids. But the lawmakers, the people who have to actually do something about it, did nothing. And then what, two years ago, when it happened in a high school again, and the high schoolers came out and spoke out against gun violence.
The kids in Florida.
And how they were torn to shreds on certain news outlets.
Certain news outlets.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. You know what? I'll say it. Fox, probably ONA, probably did it as well. You know, and you're like, what are you doing? These are our children.
Mm-hmm.
Right? These are, you know, is there, you know, we need to do a moratorium or something on this.
Well, there should be studies about the health crisis that is
absolutely
the psychological warfare that we're putting on kids.
Yeah. But I get the impression that in terms of, I think, the country in general, not individuals, but Americans in general have this kind of like standoffish view of mental health and psychology, right? Like you tell somebody you're seeing a therapist and it's like, oh, what's the matter? Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, there's still a stigma attached to it.
Right. So now,
unfair.
It's horrifying because the thing is, like you're saying, Hillary, you know, there's going to be a mental health care. There's going to be a mental health situation that's going to happen. And what are our elected officials going to be doing about it?
I don't know.
Will we have the elected officials who we know will do something about it in office?
Yeah.
Well, we don't have them now. I don't think we have them now.
No, the
sad part, Kirk, is I'm gonna answer that. That's why they want to put them back in school. because that is the thought process of these people. Mm-hmm. Oh, the children can't be. And I mean, I agree. Children do need to be around. Nothing was more happier than when they opened those playgrounds. And I took my daughter to the playground. She could run around and you know, automatically make friends. Mm. But that is the sword they're falling on. Well, these kids have been without friends for months, so they must go back into the schools because that's the only way they're going to be able to cope. No, that's not the only way. Right. There are plenty of it.
Parents, the tools to do that at home. You know, I like.
Well, you know, Hillary, to be honest with you, most people aren't. I hate to say it like this, but most people are not parents. They don't have a relationship with their children. Mm. And a lot of times when you spend your time pushing your child off on a caretaker, a nanny, you come home, the nanny is there until the child goes to bed. The only time the child ever has any interaction with you is maybe when you go on a vacation. I think that's one of the things when you think about all the people pulling their hair out and going, my children are driving me crazy. Yeah. But most of the time, because you don't spend any time with them. You know, the one thing I learned about my daughter is that once she got used to me being home, oh no, it's all over me, all over my wife. She was because I mean, I know she likes school, but there's nothing like being around your parents. There's nothing like, you know, joking and laughing. And a lot of people, they want kids. They don't want to be parents. You know, there's a huge difference between having children and actually parenting kids. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing I can almost say back with Sandy Hook. It's like, well, it wasn't my kid because I wouldn't put my kid in that situation. Oh, what situation would
they
that
were in
be?
School.
They were in school. They were there to learn. And somebody, because you guys don't want to step on somebody's toes somewhere, walked in and just gunned everybody down. Mm-hmm. And now you don't want, because I'm a firm believer that the higher up the food chain you go, the less responsibility anybody wants to take of anything. Just look at the president. He doesn't want to take responsibility for anything. I'm running the country, but it's none of this is my fault.
Not my fault.
You know, not my problem. So when that happened, you know, well, we're not the ones who pulled the trigger, you know, and then we go to the whole guns don't kill people, people kill people, every excuse under the sun.
Well, let's just call that what it is. That's the NRA.
Yeah.
And their publicity machine.
Mm-hmm.
And operated through Fox News and, like Kirk said, OAN, I think. That's the other propaganda wing, so to speak. The NRA was very much a part of shutting down the Sandy Hook protests, pretty much minimalizing all of that. And and the other school in Florida, it's like I remember those kids being
Parkland
vilified.
Parkland.
Parkland, yeah. Yes. Vilified. Like
trolled.
Like they'd already been through a shootout.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. 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 Yeah.
Watched
yeah.
friends killed. And right. and this is how we're treating them. It right. was
Should
really
these kids be in school? Shouldn't these kids be in school instead of trying to tell us what to do with our jobs?
With our guns.
Motherfucker.
If we look at, so if those kids experienced Sandy Hook as elementary school kids, because they saw the news and those are their peers, and then it happened to them personally as high school students, we see how activated they are, right? Mm-hmm. So there's hope that there is a more empathetic generation being born because they're witnessing what people are having to survive, you know? They're not guarded from any of it. They're seeing the Black Lives Matter movement. They're watching like the Me Too movement. They're watching guns and schools and COVID and all of it. Mm-hmm. And so hopefully they will be a more empathetic generation as adults, you know? Yeah. When we're geriatrics, they'll take care of us.
All right. Like, can you imagine actually a lot of those protesters, a lot of the people marching for Black Lives are probably those kids.
Mm-hmm. I hope. I mean, they're
that has really to be
smart. social media has exposed them to so much more than like what we knew about when we were growing up.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Yeah.
You know, it wasn't in my local paper, the Loudoun Easterner, you know, like I didn't know the world at all. Speaking of though, like my hometown, Steve, I wore this shirt specifically for you today. So I did this campaign with my high school last year. My high school that I went to is a Title I high school in Virginia. Yeah. It's like 8% minority. I think it's like 6% white, you know? Mm-hmm. It is, it's really low income, but it lives in the wealthiest county in the United States, Loudoun County, Virginia. Wow. So like per capita, there's so much money there except for this one high school. And it's where like the housekeeper's kids go and the landscaper's kids go and the builder's kids go. Mm-hmm. So I went back to my high school a few years ago to help them raise money for extracurriculars. Right. And it was like you were saying, they had, you know, Mark, they had no like PTA really, because those parents don't have the time. They're working three jobs. Mm-hmm. But the white kids in town could afford to go to all the camps and get Nike endorsements and like all the fun shit. So we raised money for them. Mm-hmm. Cut to this whole COVID situation. And everybody back there is like floundering, except for the Title I school.
Cool. Yeah.
Because these kids are so resilient and they're so smart and they've already encountered obstacles in their life. Mm-hmm. And so they've had to work with so little for so long that when school was shut down, they immediately went into problem solving mode. And they used school buses to deliver food to all the kids in the district. They opened up the school as a pantry where families could come and just like get whatever they needed. You know, you need toilet paper, you need Clorox, you need tampons, you need like whatever, canned food. They had a church that was growing fresh food. So the building itself became a social services space, but because they weren't having classes, it was safe for people to go there. They could social distance.
Yeah.
And then it's become a counseling center for the kids.
Wow.
So, nice. Like you're in crisis, you can go there. So I feel like there are creative thinkers who are figuring out how to solve a lot of the problems that virtual teaching presents. And if we can follow those models, like, great. But the problem is all these schools are still wishy-washy about, we don't know if we're going back. We don't know if we're going to be a hybrid model. We don't know what we're doing. This school committed to virtual learning. They called weeks ago. And so they're spending all this lead up time solving the gaps. And, and that's what we have to do. You solve the big problem and then you go in and you start plugging all the holes.
All right.
I'll say this with the blended learning, and this is where as they say, mistakes are made. There are three different models.
Yeah. Three different lesson plans.
Three different models, and the chancellor's like, the principals will choose the model they work off of. No. Pick one and tell everybody they have to conform to that. And let them figure out within the buildings, because the problem here in the city is that unlike the South or the Midwest and everything, our schools are built up. Mm-hmm. They were never designed for this. They were never, some of these schools are over 100 years old. You know, they don't have HVAC systems in them. They don't, many of them don't even have elevators. You know, we still have window air conditioners. We don't have central air. So, but this is what happens. You start creating a choice for too many people to decide what they've, like I heard, we heard that one school, a friend of my wife's school, the principal, like they were talking about setting up tents outside because it would be for on good days, on the nice day, it's safer to be outside than inside of a classroom. Principal's like, I'm not doing that. I'm doing school from 8 a.m. to 11. What? So if I have to work a 9 to 5, by the time I get to work, I have to turn around and come back and get my kid. And my thing is that, but what program are you working off of? Because that's not the program, that's not even part of the choices. As a principal, but now we're gonna do what we feel like doing. And that's one of the main problems. If we would get on one page and follow that from beginning to end, the thing would work. Because what's gonna happen is, should we have to shut the schools down again?
Yeah.
reopening is going to be a nightmare because everybody's going to say, well, my plan didn't work. So now I'm going to try. Like, even now they said you can do blended learning or you can, or the kids can stay home and do remote learning.
Mm-hmm. Are you at a charter school?
No.
Are you in a public school?
I'm in a public school.
Because our public school up here made every single teacher do three different lesson plans, one for virtual, one for in-person, mm-hmm. one for hybrid. Mm-hmm. And what they've told us is that they're not going to pull the trigger on anything until mid-August when the governor says mm-hmm. what we're
going to do. Well, we have this. So we have been told, prepare for September. It's not a go yet. So all of what we're doing right now is planning. Because the governor still has to say green light. You know, I think people forget New York City is part of New York State. You know, I think even New Yorkers forget
we're part.
Like, until we're driving up by Hillary and then we run into some state troopers. Yeah, I think, and then we get reminded. Like, oh, yeah.
Just hang out on the farm here.
It's like what we used to say when you went to a party and they had the roll call in college. And there's like, it's Brooklyn, Queens, Manhattan, Staten Island. Everybody's in the house. And somebody be like, what about Syracuse? That's not New York.
Staten Island. Staten who?
That's not New York.
That's Jersey.
That's not New York. Come on, man. Come on.
Staten Island's Jersey.
In all fairness, Staten Island does have Wu-Tang.
Yeah, there it is.
But
what? Who?
Oh, wow.
For one blame.
But, I mean, I guess this is all made all the more chaotic and awful just for the fact that we have a president that is, I guess, trying to hold back funding if schools don't open. And
he threatened it. Yeah, he threatened it.
Which he cannot do.
Governors. Well, of course not. But I mean, but you know, he makes up shit like I make up vampire stuff. You know, it's like, you know, the only problem is I'm just entertaining.
It's the first four presidents, Steve.
You know, but yeah, I mean, the problem is his making up stuff actually hurts people.
Yeah. Yes.
And then you have, so this whole thing with Jared Kushner, who was supposed to be, the spearhead of dealing with the whole coronavirus thing. But then somewhere along the way, while he and his frat brothers were devising their master plan that at least would have been a response,
yeah,
they decided to basically do nothing. It's a big article in Vanity Fair. They decided to do nothing because they somehow got it in their heads that it was going, that the virus was going to affect Democratic run states mm-hmm. more than red states. And yep. And first of all, it's like, I'm sorry, that's not really how science works. like what the fuck? Like, and these people, and these right, speaking well, of education,
well, Steve, didn't you hear?
Paying a lot of money for an education. So well, Steve, I would
didn't
say,
you hear? Daddy paid money. Daddy paid money.
Yes, of course.
Yeah, Steve, didn't you hear? The Democrats are filled with immigrants and minorities that carry disease.
Well,
and witches. Know,
And witches.
Wiccans.
And I guess, I mean, is that part of the whole? Because I know the televangelists that the red state folks listen to, they're always on the radio and on their little shows, and they're always talking about, well, the reason this happened in New York, brethren, is because New York, they have the Muslims.
They have the homosexuals.
And they have the black people in the corner with the hippity hop.
Go ahead, Creflo Sense.
Gangsta rap. And that's why Jesus smited them.
Is that your Southern accent, Steve?
I don't know what the fuck that was. Anyway.
Creflo Dollar mad at you now.
Well, I was already mad at Creflo Dollar, so that works out. So I do you think that's where the logic came from? I'm just trying to understand because, like, you watch New York fall apart.
Yeah. And I stopped talking to people that I love because I tweeted out, they're murdering us. You know, when New York was getting thousands of deaths a day, they were murdering us by withholding help, by not enforcing the, what is it, Production Act. the Domestic Production Act, is that what it's called?
Yes.
Still has not been enacted to get enough. We're going to need PPE for our hospitals for this second wave. We're going to need it for school. Problem. Mm-hmm. There's nothing. There's nothing. Yeah. You know, they threw us to the wolves, and the same machines like the NRA that have been pushing the Second Amendment have also been pushing this whole right not to wear a mask message.
Oh my God. And
It's
ridiculous.
It's not fun to watch that bite people in the ass. It's not fun to read those news articles about, oh, here comes my daughter. Even she's pissed.
I hear her dropping F-bombs in the back.
Yeah, she's like, no! But it's not fun to read those news stories.
Oh, come here, bunny. You want to say hi?
We're working from home!
No, this is a typical Thursday night, around 10 o'clock? Mm-hmm. When we're sitting here talking and my daughter comes in?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, because that
Listen,
is
I don't
basically
want to
the
hear anyone
host.
Complaining about working at home, because we're all doing it.
Come here, boss.
We're all doing it.
We're putting on a show. Let me grab her.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah, so
I don't know, man.
I don't know. We're a mess. Oh, hey!
Hey, lady.
Oh, she's feeling shy. Lady.
Yeah.
She's feeling shy.
You know, she was supposed to start doing like preschool stuff, and her preschool teacher posted something on Facebook that I'll send to you, Steve. Mm-hmm. They were all because daycare hasn't been really lumped in with this whole school conversation.
No, okay.
Mm-hmm. Right.
They were going to open up as like a daycare, and pre-COVID, she was going to start going there just to get acclimated.
Right.
So they worked all summer long to create a plan in order to be able to open up, mm-hmm. and they were ready to go for an August 3rd opening. And a few days ago, the preschool teacher, one of the members of her household got COVID, and she had no idea that the whole time they were prepping, they exposed all the teachers at the school, And she's like, I can't in good conscience just open up and make you feel like your kids are going to be safe. If you're sending your kid to a facility, you have to understand that they will be exposed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You can't live in that fairy tale.
Yeah.
It's kind of like the...
Say hi, Jeff.
What's up?
Hey,
what's up?
Hey, Jeff.
Hey.
How you doing?
Hey.
Good. How are you? Sorry.
Good.
Hello, sir.
We're having a round table about school and sending kids back and how unsafe it is.
Yeah.
No. Jeff's teaching math now.
I'm not very good at math, but we'll figure it out.
Yeah.
Nice to see you guys. I heard a kid.
That's it. All right. I love you. Thank you.
All right.
Yeah, man.
There we go.
It's all hands on deck.
Yeah.
If we look at the coming school year like it's going to be childbirth, and you just know it's going to suck, and you know it's going to hurt, but you know at a certain point, like, the baby will be out, it makes it more manageable. So we all just have to admit it's going to suck. It's going to suck.
Yeah. I mean, we're going to adjust. I already said if, one, I'm not paying for anything else. I mean, it's bad enough with everything else that I got to flip out money for. If I have to stay home, I mean, my position in the building is not that dire that I need to be there every single day. So if I have to stay home and make sure my daughter's safe and make sure that everything is taken care of, then that's what I'll have to do. If I have to leave work early, you know, we have to start being accommodating. You know, the people, the powers that be, I mean, the Department of Education here has to understand and has to know that almost everybody who's either teaching or works within a school has kids.
Yeah.
Of various ages, from newborns all the way up to teenagers.
Right.
And we have to start, I mean, the thing that's funny to me, so Carranza, the chancellor, when we start talking about, well, what are parents supposed to do? What are we supposed to do as families in this end? This was his response. Well, Google said their people can stay work from home till 2021.
Oh, sweet God.
Oh, God.
Okay.
Google?
That's great to know. However, I work for the Department of Education.
Oh,
how does that explain? So I guess that's the whole, if I say it loud enough, I'll will it into existence that all companies in New York will file. And privatized companies can do that. They can afford, because I keep thinking New York, there was a whole article the other day about how small businesses are basically dying in New York, which are really much the backbone of this city.
Right.
Yeah. So people are leaving the city en masse. You know, there's an exodus. Businesses are shutting down. And I can't help but think, what's going to happen when a corporation goes, we can have all of our workers work from home remotely. We don't have to pay that $40,000 a month for those office spaces up on Fifth Avenue. So we're going to just dumb it down to our corporate office out in West Bubblefoot, Long Island, in one of those little mall areas, and we're leaving. I mean, what happens to that? Nobody's renting those spaces. So right. the city in of itself is going to find it. They're going to get there. We're going to get our ass kicked pretty soon. But the question now is, now that the city is almost going to revert back to the people who actually live here running the city, how are the police, the EMS, ACS, human resources, all of the city-based civil service jobs, you're going to have to now let some of us work from home. So now what? If those people are like, I'm not coming to work, I'll work from home. I'll work remotely. What are you going to do? Fire me? Because that's going to look real good in the New York Times, you know, when I, you know, make that phone call and, you know.
It's such a flood of that, though. I mean, even the conversation about women in the workplace, all the gains that women have made in the last decade to, you know, grapple their way into the workplace have been lost because mothers now are like, well, I guess my husband makes more than me, so I'll be the one that stays home and he'll continue to work.
Wow.
It's a shoots and ladders that sucks.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, you get up that ladder and you just, you know, you hope you roll the dice correctly, otherwise you slide right back down.
It's kind of like any and all progressive gains that were made or even used to help for the situation are just being dismantled one by one.
By
just the inaction of the circumstance.
Yes. Hopefully, what if this is the moment where, because the whole like Jenga tower has fallen down,
right,
we finally can see all the pieces. There have been so many hidden pieces for so long and so many inequities.
Right.
That's true.
Like,
that's
true. What if this is the moment where from this election onward, we can't ignore systemic racism anymore. We can't ignore sexual harassment in the workplace.
Right.
You know, we can't ignore the things that have been really easy to kind of sidestep.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's the optimistic view. Like, show me the shit.
We're looking forward to the like younger generation to get rid of the little fingers that are in office. Because this is all it is. All these motherfuckers in office is pretty much set up a situation where chaos will make them more money and fuck all everybody else. So we're just waiting for Sansa and
Arya
to grow up to take them out.
Also, could you have cast more Batman-looking villains? characters? Like, between the jowls and the, like, ham-hock faces and just...
You know what? That's... If DC or Marvel are smart, they'd make a new villain.
A Lindsey Graham comic book villain?
Yeah, or a Trump comic book villain. Like, because the beautiful thing about Trump is he has a son that can play off in that as well. So instead of Batman and Robin, you got, you know, the orange menace.
Well, I almost feel Like, yeah, like I almost feel that's it's a little redundant, only because, I mean, it, obviously he's not an intelligent criminal, like let's say Lex Luthor, but there's definitely, you know what? Okay, all
right. Clever. He's not intelligent, but he's clever.
Oh yeah, mm-hmm. Totally.
He's clever. He's not Kingpin, but he's the Goblin.
Yeah. That's right? A good one. The Goblin, right. Yeah, he's just riding around on his little electric bat, right. Like spreading a disease.
He has his moments of clarity.
With orange gas, no less. Yes.
He has a moment of clarity.
Like, someone needs to start working on this immediately.
I mean, I still think, you know, his greatest performance was playing the mayor in Jaws. Because that's literally what this is Jaws we're living through. It really...
Amity's the summer town.
So you don't have the tooth? And what did you say the name of this thing was? It's called COVID-19.
Yeah.
But you haven't seen it, have you? I don't think you understand the gut reaction we have here. You say flu, people say, huh, what? You yell COVID, we have a disaster on the 4th of July. No kidding. That jackass.
Oh my God.
We are in hell. That's basically the summary of it. We are in hell. And and we've got plagues.
Yeah.
I'm still waiting for the locusts. That's what I'm waiting
They're
for.
They're here. Aren't they coming up this year?
Murder hornets. I think
we had murder hornets. We did have murder hornets.
All right. So, but I didn't actually get to see a murder hornet.
And Kanye West.
Well, don't ask for it. You better knock on some shit right now, Steve.
All right.
Hey, Kurt.
Yeah.
Kurt, that's darkness.
Kanye West, yes.
That's the other place.
Speaking of the sunken place, right? Exactly.
Oh no, guys, Kanye. It's so bad. I mean, speaking of mental illness, someone who's in the throes of like a major freak out for political gain is just as nefarious and awful as you can get, and he's just being used like a pawn right now. It's horrific.
I feel he should have stayed with Amber Rose.
Right now,
he was pretty stable.
You know, hindsight being 2020. I mean,
I'm just saying,
you're not wrong.
I mean, what's the worst thing Amber Rose has done, really?
She got words for in terms of women and what needs to happen.
Yeah.
She's not a wallflower about that. So I'm just saying.
Oh, we don't like Shy. Shy's not
no.
our guy.
No.
I just don't. I don't even see where that's gonna. How that's even gonna work? Because it seems to me that the only people that would vote for him would be Trump's people. Like I don't even see.
And
I mean,
a lot of Trump's people are still racist, so I'm sure they'd be torn.
Right. You have to.
He says all the right things, but he still does that hippity-hoppity music, and he's still black.
I mean, leave BC alone. You know that man in jail still.
unless we're taking a page out of Do the Right Thing, he's not black. You know,
right.
Michael Jordan, they're not black. They're more than black.
Hillary, I'm gonna need you to do a favor for me, please.
Do it. What?
Do the world a favor. You're a witch.
I mean,
need you to.
I don't want
to
brag about it, but
we need you to like add a protective spell against the curse of Herman Cain.
Oh.
Oh, shit.
You know, I come from the South where.
Half
the people I went to high school with are Trump supporters. They are Republican.
Yeah, I would imagine.
My world is really 50-50. And so what happens is rather than listen to the majority of a community that says, hi, we're hurting. Hi, this is bad for us. Right. They find that one voice that will be the voice of dissent. And they hang on to that. And so whether it is, you know, a Ben Carson or Herman Cain or what is it, the two ladies.
Silken Spectre?
Yeah.
Silken Spectre. Diamond and Silk.
Diamond and Silk.
Those two clowns, yeah.
It's rather than find, like, listen to the masses that are saying really, like, vulnerable confessions right. of, like, this hurts, to find those couple voices and just, that fits, that checks my box. Yes, yes, right. I'm going to hang on to that, is really hard. And to watch the Herman Cain of it all, watch him, like, buy into the no mask wearing, let's go to the rally.
He's been like that since from way back since Obama, since Bush.
Since he was freed, basically. Yeah, pretty much.
It's terrible. Yeah. It's not, it doesn't feel good to watch somebody pay for what they fucked up on. Like, that doesn't, you know.
No, it's not. Yeah, I don't find it satisfying personally, but.
I'm sorry, guys. I must be a psychopath because that shit made me laugh.
No,
I saw that shit. I was like this.
I bought good. A t-shirt. I love it.
Kurt was on the floor. When I sent the
text. Yeah, exactly. Kurt doesn't even dance. And he was
I sent the text out that morning. And Steven was like, word, that's messed up. And all I got from Kurt was good. And I was like, wow. My phone was like, wow.
I'm that cat. I'm that cat who did. Yeah, you know what? Send him to the wall. I'm that cat. Oh, he wants to be against the community because we're trying to do something here. And you, where the dragons at? Burn that motherfucker.
The dragons. Where are the dragons?
Burn that motherfucker.
Well, I mean, let's face it.
I'm sorry.
There definitely is a lesson to, you know, just to paraphrase what they tell you in the airport or on the airplane. You know. Put out your own fire before you put out masses, you know, and that, you know,
yeah,
that's Herman Cain for you. He was so busy trying to be a good boy.
People are actually making excuses about his passing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He didn't get it from the rally. He got, Gourmet, whatever the fuck his name is, who got COVID and had his staff come into the office.
Oh my God.
Jesus.
He's telling people that he got it probably because of his mask.
Yeah, exactly.
Because that's how that shit works. Yeah.
Right.
By the way, are these the people making the decision that, like, schools kind of wishy-washy?
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. That's exactly who they are.
I mean, my favorite part of that was when they asked Fauci the next day. It was like, does wearing a mask or touching your mask give you COVID? He was like, wait, what? Literally, he was like, wait, what? No. No. And he was like, okay, just wanted to make sure. Because it's like watching the Jim Jones documentary.
Yes.
And going, I don't understand who is stupid enough to follow this guy. And now I'm living the real Jim Jones story. And it's like, how do we get away from these people? Because it's
Kool-Aid
like,
and all.
Well, we just have to be loud about it, and it's uncomfortable.
Yeah, but yeah.
Being loud's the only thing you can do to get the shake people up.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, Hillary, we appreciate you being loud.
I miss you.
I miss you too. Oh wow. It is good to see you.
It's really good to see you. I mean, we'll have to do like something fun and debaucherous in the city when we get the green light. Kirk and Mark and I can all party together.
I know just the place.
We won't jump on popcorn.
It has no rats, but. No rats, but.
Damn.
Don't order.
Well, she's used to them now, so I mean.
I'm just saying, don't order the chili.
I can do that.
Okay, that's easy. That's easy enough.
Don't order the chili.
But anyway. Thank you so much, Hillary. I can't even tell you how much I appreciate you doing this.
Well, I can't wait to read whatever you write while you're in quarantine.
Oh, well, yes, we'll be sending you advanced copies of stuff.
Yep.
Can't wait.
Review it. Put on good
And before we go, we have to actually congratulate Mark.
Oh.
Who won an acting award, speaking of acting.
Yeah.
Thank you. So, Identity Check.
Yeah.
Directed by the great Patrick Devaney. It's a short. It's a sci-fi short. And Mark has again, because this is like, I don't know, what is this, like your fifth acting award or something like that?
What?
Yeah.
No, but it's officially my first award. I've been nominated. but this is the first acting award that I've gotten.
Mark, I've never won an acting award. Mark's better than me. Mark's better than me.
Who, Denzel over here?
Oh,
he's like a white collar. He's like a white collar Training Day.
I mean, you know what's funny? That's the fun of all the roles that I play. I get the award for being the bad guy, not for playing the compassionate father, not for fighting zombies. I got it for playing the jerk at the other end of the office.
It's more fun.
It is more fun. Yeah.
It is.
Yes.
It
well, is. And of course Hillary would say that.
Yeah. I only play bad guys.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, the bad guy rolls
off. That'd be awesome. Oh, yeah.
But anyway, yeah, that's so awesome. a big Beef, Wine, and Shenanigans. Congratulations to our very own Mark Abbott for that.
Thank you.
Look at him trying to blush.
Yeah, right?
To blush.
What's next, Denzel?
Bastard. I know, right?
He's going to have to come to a Christmas movie with me. We'll make some, like, Christmas magic.
Okay.
Yeah. Hey, I'm all for it.
It's for the kids. The kids.
All right. I'll do the lighting.
Well, while we wait for a socially distant Christmas coming to a theater near you, we're going to close out this episode of Beef, Wine, and Shenanigans for Kirk Johnson, Mark Abbott, and myself, and the lovely Hillary Burton Morgan. We thank you for listening. Take it easy.